let them paint their posters with your blood, not if you can help it.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all of the internet's most popular books and letting you know whether it's worth the time in your schedule to take a read. And we have some fun social media trendy books for you today. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. And today we are doing the second Hunger Games prequel. Pre-Hunger Games, technically, but, you know, post the original series coming out. We already reviewed the prequel from Snow's perspective, and this book is from our beloved Haymitch's perspective. So back to the similar world of Panem, but this time we get to see District 13 as Haymitch lived it before Katniss was around.
And District 12?
District 12. What did I call it?
13.
District 13. Oh, spoiler.
Not yet.
yeah, the original trilogy has been out for like, what, 20 years? So if you didn't get that.
Oh, we are not that old. Come on.
I know. I mean, but it's probably like 15. Like, it came out when we were in elementary school.
That's true.
I was not in elementary school, but.
Anyway. So we basically, in this book, we live through Haymitch's Hunger Games. So, yeah. Do you guys have your reviews?
Yeah.
By the way, the book's called Sunrise on the Raping.
So, oh, by that one,
yeah. We didn't say that.
They know what it is.
Yeah, I have my review. The one-star reviews were kind of lame, so I just went for five-star because those were funny and less wordy. And this one's a five-star on Goodreads, and it says, Coriolanus Snow, you will answer for your crimes, and Tom Blythe can't save you.
Love you, Tom Blythe.
I can go next. I have some one- and two-star reviews. The first one, I want to put Suzanne Collins in a room with poison berries. The second one, two stars, Suzanne, for the love of God, put the pen down.
Wow.
Damn.
And then this is my favorite one, three stars. Enjoyed the story, but she really just reheated those nachos.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Well, I have two for you. 4.5 stars. How did a book where I know the general outcome still manage to surprise me? It allowed me to have just a little bit of hope for the briefest of moments before laughing in my face.
Period.
And then five stars. Incredible, flawless, deliciously brutal. Everything I wanted Haymitch's story to be and more. Also, I'm so sorry for whatever we did to deserve this, Suzanne.
Damn. Yeah, so those are some negative reviews, but overall the book is very well received. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.6 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.8 out of 5. So that's pretty good. Did you guys agree?
I mean, it's my homie Suzanne Collins. The reason why I got into reading was The Hunger Games. I hated reading prior to reading The Hunger Games. So if I didn't give it a 5, that would be like blasphemy. So I gave it a 5.
I give it a 4, actually. I love everything she writes. There were two things. I did not buy into the romance. I don't think it was I don't know. I didn't buy into it. Maybe that's because now I'm an adult reading about teenagers. And then I also was so sick of that poem. Okay.
Yes.
Please. Oh my God. That poem was a little much.
Especially the end.
Yeah. I was just skipping it by the end. I was like, I'm not reading this again. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, Caitlin. I gave it 4 stars. I liked it. I thought it was a compelling story. Suzanne Collins just really, like, similar to Harry Potter, it's like a really hard concept to beat. Like, it's just very naturally intriguing and very interesting to read. and also heartbreaking to read. I did feel like I found the characters a little disappointing. I wonder when I look back if I'm over idealizing the original series a little bit, because they were so like formative for me and my reading experiences too. But I just felt like those books were like more complicated and we really walked with the characters through a lot more. And so I think comparatively, this book felt just a little bit more flat. That's part of why I agreed with my 3-star review that I read, where I was like, you know, this is still interesting and good. It's just that it just feels like kind of basic. Like, this is, let me just reserve you the same concept. So I kind of wanted, especially from Haymitch, to get a little bit more of his personal journey, and you get some of that. But like, yeah.
I mean, I'll read about her writing The Hunger Games all 75 times if I need to.
Yes. Every Hunger Games.
But it's always intriguing. Like, I can't not like it. Like, it was, I still liked it. And there were moments that got me.
Especially because Haymitch is like a pretty, one of the most interesting characters in the trilogy.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that's also why I found it a little disappointing, is like, he's such an interesting character that I think I have really high expectations.
I think it's hard to write a story where all your readers already know the ending. And I think she did a really good job with that. But that's probably why it feels maybe a little bit repetitive, is because like, we know Haymitch's ending. Like, he obviously survives his games.
Right? Well, and I think also something that this book does is, this book is supposed to be read after you read the original series. So you're supposed to have already read pre-context. And so the book almost assumes you know things that you, if you had read it in chronological order, you wouldn't have necessarily known.
Can you imagine reading this before Catching Fire?
Dude,
that'd been crazy.
I would have been sobbing on the floor, deceased.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Because I did really like all the connections. Mm-hmm. Like, this book, much more than the other one, feels like it sets up Katniss's Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the things that Haymitch does ultimately come back in the series.
And it's like the modernized ways. Games where,
right,
Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes is the beginning of the game and games, and you find out why they got so intricate.
Right. And it's also a lot more about the winner's experience without, like, you know, with Katniss, ultimately there's a revolution. And so she doesn't have like a traditional post-games experience, but Haymitch does. And it's interesting to watch that, because it's continues to be heartbreaking after the games are over.
That sort of leads into our first question of, is this more plot or character driven?
That's kind of tough, actually.
I think it has to be plot, just because it is ultimately about following the Hunger Games. But like, obviously Haymitch is like very much changed after like surviving it.
Well, and he's main person that makes changes to the whole world.
I'm actually going to say character, because I feel like we didn't need this story. So like, we didn't need this plot, but she gave it to us anyway. And it's about Haymitch and his experience more than it is, like, so little of the book is in the actual arena.
Yeah. I think I would argue character as well, because he's the one making changes to the world. Like, no one else, like, people are helping him, but he and his own choices and decisions inform what happens next. And it was crazy seeing the parallels between him and Katniss. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. I still disagree. And that's part of what the book is about, though, is that he's ultimately still powerless and stuck in Snow's web. So it didn't really matter, any of his choices.
True.
He's the victor and everyone else is dead. So.
Yeah. Understatement.
Okay. This question we might as well skip. Would you read other books by the author? Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I did find out recently that she used to write episodes of, like, if you were like a PBS kid, Little Bear and Oswald.
Ah, Oh my
God. I love that show.
I loved Little Bear.
There was TikToks that were like, are you telling me the same Suzanne Collins that brought us The Hunger Games used to write like these silly songs on these PBS shows?
That makes so much sense now because of all the songs she puts in all of her books, and they're always good.
Yeah, that's wild. Also, she has, I think I've mentioned this on other, like I mentioned this at the last Hunger Games episode we did, but she, in addition to writing teen fiction, also wrote some like primary school level fiction, so which I did read when I was younger too. So yeah, she's got a wide repertoire.
I need some like adult fiction now.
Yeah.
However, the Hunger Games are very not why I'm, you know, we right. read them when we were young, but looking back at it now, I'm like, that's so dark to read as a middle schooler.
Genocide.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like mutants of other dead tributes coming to attack you after you kill them. Like, honestly, sometimes I can't believe we were reading that.
Horrifying.
Yeah. Prim's storyline.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Anyway, how was the pacing of the book and how long did it take you to read?
I actually liked the pacing.
Yeah.
I've seen people in the reviews critique it because, Caitlin, you said this earlier, but comparatively, the games themselves are not that big of a portion of the book. But it didn't bother me. I thought that every part of the book was compelling in its own way.
I pulled a Catherine and I read it in one day.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. It like read like a movie, like mm-hmm. a screenplay. And I was just enthralled. And so, and it's not like, it is YA, so it's not a hard read. So I just sat down and read it all at once. And it was honestly a fantastic way to experience it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that.
I mean, it's a relatively short book. Compared to other books we have read for this podcast, it's on the shorter side. And I read it in 2 days, but the 2 days were very separated by multiple weeks because I was busy with life. But once I picked it up again, like I read 40 pages, put it down, and then 2 weeks go by, I pick it up and finish it in one sitting. So mm-hmm. yes, it is a very well-paced book, for sure.
Yeah, I think it took me 3 days, but yeah not super long.
Okay. So the book and the movie were announced simultaneously.
Interesting.
Which I was kind of like, oh, is she just writing this book because they want a movie? But then reading it, I'm like, no, people are right. She doesn't write without anything. When she has nothing to say. So she had something to say. But will you be watching Sunrise on the Reaping, the movie?
Of course.
Which I think comes out next year.
Yeah, it does.
I feel like this is crazy, but I honestly don't feel the need to. I didn't watch The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes either. Like, I just don't really feel called.
So I actually didn't watch Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes until like a week before reading this book. I was like, oh yeah, I should probably do that. It was honestly really good. So I would watch Sunrise on the Reaping.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love Rachel Zegler and she carried that movie.
It was very authentic to the book.
No, it was very authentic to the book. My coworker and I have been talking about this book, and she's been doing fan casts of Sunrise on the Reaping. And let's just say, like, I think she got it almost perfectly right.
Oh, do tell.
There's some background stuff that, because she's a journalist, she knows that I can't say on a podcast, but I think she got it.
Okay, so not a fan cast, an actual cast.
Well, she fan casted it and then found out that the actual cast might actually be very similar to her fan cast. Like, offers have been out for those actors.
Who do you want to see play Haymitch?
I don't know, because I honestly don't follow male actors, like, not gonna lie.
I feel like it needs to be someone kind of relatively unknown. Like, I know Tom Blythe wasn't like unknown, but like, you know,
yeah,
it launched him,
A-lister. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know, because he has to be like around 16. Like, they'll probably cast someone who's more like 18, but you know, like somewhere in that range. And I'm 26 now, so I feel like super disconnected from like the actors who are that age. I don't know who they are anymore.
Like, I've seen some about like the guy that plays Percy Jackson in the TV series.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
I don't think he's the right fit for that.
No, I don't think so either. He is fantastic in that TV series, though.
Yes.
Okay. T.
And he did recently hit puberty.
He did. His voice dropped.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, we talked about pacing and stuff, but what's your busy girl rating?
I'm gonna give it a 5. I think that this book, if you like dystopian, you'll love it. If you don't like dystopian, I think this could get you into it. The Hunger Games is just such a unique and interesting concept that I don't find a lot of people who dislike Suzanne Collins and her series. And when they do, I discredit their opinions almost immediately. So 5 stars.
I have the same thing. I was going to give it 5. It's pretty short. I thought it was interesting the whole time. I didn't think it was a perfect book, but I still liked it and was invested in it. So I think it's 5.
I'm just going to round that out with another 5.
It's been a while.
Yeah, Perfect Busy Girls 5 doesn't happen that often, but yeah, I mean, I read it in one sitting, so I really can't give it anything but.
All right, well, now we get to get oh my god, word salad. Now we get to get into our spoiler alert section.
So ready. Stop here before continuing on, although you'll probably know the ending if you read the original series, but there's a lot in the middle that you don't know about, and it's crazy. So yeah, you're gonna want to stop and read it first.
Let's talk first about our leading man, Haymitch. You know, when we get him in the trilogy, he's a grouchy alcoholic who like begrudgingly mentors Katniss and Peeta, but secretly has like a heart of gold and is helping them in so many more ways than you realize, even more when you realize what's going on in this book. However, this is young Haymitch before the games ruined his life. What did you think of him?
Okay, this is one of my bigger gripes. I liked young Haymitch, and I like that he's so innocent in comparison to the character that we know from the original Hunger Games trilogy. However, I did think that he was missing some key character traits that I was really looking forward to reading again. Specifically that Haymitch is really funny. Like, in the original trilogy, he often serves as comedic relief because he always has, like, a sassy, sardonic comment to say. And so I expected reading him to be a little bit more fun, to be honest. And I didn't totally think that the character through line really worked. Because even at the very end, post Hunger Games, when you're reading his perspective, he still feels very like sad and downtrodden, which obviously he was, but I just didn't feel like he really had the same essence by the end of the story, which that he was very much like depressed and like sad and an alcoholic in the original series, but he was also still like kind of like an ass.
Yeah.
And he didn't serve that. I didn't get that person at the end.
I see what you mean. Yeah. But I think he needs Katniss as a foil in order to be that sardonic, sassy ass, because him and Katniss are so similar that he like needs his younger foil in order to be like that. And I think he uses it as a coping mechanism. It's his way of pushing people away. And you see that in this book. And now we're seeing his inner thoughts, and his inner thoughts are depressive. They're not funny.
I also think he's funnier in the movies than in the books.
Yes.
That's true. I don't totally remember what he was like in the books, to be honest.
And I think the ending, when it talks about, he says, you know, every year on my birthday, I'll get 2 new tributes to mentor and the sun will rise on the reaping.
Yeah,
I think that's where he over time will become the asshole he is yeah. Because he gets to mentor kids to their death every single year on his birthday.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday.
And all the people he loves are gone.
Also, I did not realize that the reaping is on July 4th.
I know.
That was wild.
I don't think it had ever been said. But now mm-hmm. that it was, I was like, whoa.
I did notice that. I did.
That's a call out. It's fine.
Right. But I did like how much the games changed him. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that like, was you can, definitely character development.
Yeah. And character I love
devolvement, maybe.
Right. Right. And I did love, okay, so the part in the book at the end that made me the most sad was basically how he was just like Katniss and had all the traits that he needed to like be Katniss, as in the sense of like be the one who like started the revolution. But like it just wasn't the right time and his efforts like failed because there just wasn't enough other factors happening at the same time. And it was so painful because it also makes you think about all the other people like him who died, who mm-hmm. were almost the right moment, but not quite. Like it was never quite the right factors at quite the right time, who like really tried to fight the system and failed. And it was so demoralizing for him. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to cry.
Well, I mean, he did the exact same thing Katniss did in Catching Fire, like to a T, did the exact same thing. And then the moment that was the most painful was when he was watching back the distorted Quarter Quell. And he mm-hmm. realized the entire thing, he's just made to look like a jackass mm-hmm. and that he didn't do all the things he did actually. And he was like, this is complete propaganda. Like, this didn't happen.
Yeah.
There's a quote that was an option for us to read at the beginning that we didn't read that perfectly sums that up. And it's his conversation with, not Plutarch, right?
It might be Plutarch.
They have the game maker guy. What's his name? Oh, well. It says you were capable of imagining a different future and maybe it won't be realized today. Maybe not in our lifetime. Maybe it will take generations. We're all part of a continuum. Does that make it pointless?
Yeah, that's Plutarch.
Okay. So yeah, right. That was, I don't know. It was like you said, it was just like right person, wrong time.
And I will say Plutarch has always pissed me off a little bit because he got to enjoy the luxury and privilege mm-hmm. while also mm-hmm. trying to be part of the, like the good guys, the rebellion. And when he was saying that to Haymitch in his lowest point where his entire family is probably going to die, where everything he loves is going to be taken from him. He's just like, well, cheer up. It might happen in the future. It's like, no, that's not what you say to a 16-year-old boy who basically just had to see gruesome murders, tried so hard to change the system and to break out of it and save his family. And now he's about to go back to basically a genocide of his family. Like, you don't get to say that, Plutarch.
Yeah. It's true.
He's a morally gray.
Very complicated
character. By the way, Philip Seymour Hoffman, who played Plutarch in the trilogy, has a very young son he left behind. Maybe we'll get his son in the movie. Not
there's
that
also
young.
Rumors I mean, that Keith or Sutherland, who's Donald Sutherland's son, might play Snow.
That would be cool.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, this kid was born in 03, Google says. So I'm kind of like, that would be pretty good aging for that character. So
yeah,
that could be fun to get some of the, you know, descendants of the actors as the prequel to their characters. I don't know, that'd be fun.
Right. Okay, so one of the first events in the book is obviously the reaping, and we learn, I actually didn't know this, I didn't know if they mentioned it in the other
they did not
parts, but Haymitch was not actually reaped. They called someone else's name. And then the kid runs, he gets shot, Lenore Dove makes a fuss about it, and Haymitch is trying to protect her and ends up just getting pulled to be the replacement.
Effie's, the precursor to Effie is a terrible human being.
Yeah.
Estella, oh my God.
Actually just wanted to like kill her. She was so awful.
I like loved Maisie Donner because of it, because she would just like get under Drusilla's skin and just be like, you look disgusting, you and your 6-inch heels better go break your own neck. Like I was like, yes, thank you, Maisie.
Dude, yeah. I'm not going to lie. I read this book for Maisily. She was my favorite character.
I feel like a lot of people did.
I am obsessed with her. Oh my God, it killed me.
Yeah, that reaping scene was... It's right at the beginning. So, like, I was reading it. I was like, wow, this is going to be a doozy of a book.
Yeah. That really sets it up for, oh, and you know how this ends. Great. He's in for a ride.
Right. It was devastating.
Just, like, you know how it ends, but... Because of how his games were, like you said, edited, like, it's so much worse than you thought.
Right. Okay. So then it's the Quarterquell, or I think that's the name of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's also two times the amount of tributes. Instead of just a boy and a girl, there's two boys and two girls from every district. We already mentioned Maisily, my icon, RIP, miss her forever. But there's also Luella, who becomes Lulu. Yes. And then what's the name of the other boy? I can't even remember.
Wyatt,
in addition to Maisily, who are the other District 12 tributes.
It's a scrappy bunch.
Yeah. Very District 12.
Well, I felt so bad because Luella is 13 and obviously is like kind of like a little sister to Haymitch. And that I did not expect that chariot scene where she dies. And I was like, what are they going to do? Again,
I was like, we're not even to the games yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it also just goes to show that there were so many bugs in the Hunger Games before we get to like Katniss's time where there's zero bugs. Like they have it down to a science by that point because it's been 74 of them. Mm-hmm. So you kind of see the evolution of the games. And even this Quarterquell, which in Katniss's time, they think back on it being like this perfect, flawless kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. There was a lot of kinks and a lot of issues. And the fact that a tribute died in the parade because of the spectators being too drunk and throwing bombs, blue paint bombs. I don't know. It was just kind of like, it just showed how like the Capitol, because they were treating these tributes like they're animals, caged animals. They talk about their claws. They talk about, like, they were animals to them. But then they were acting like animals in the stands, being drunk off their asses. And I'm like, so really, who's the animal here?
Like, the Tribute Center is a high school gym, you know? Like, things are better than in Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, but they're still not to the level of Katniss's, which is, like... A, makes it harder for Katniss to do what she did, but also makes it more, like, poignant when she does it. That, like, even the perfection of the Capitol can fall. So that was interesting, too. But, yeah, I at first hated Wyatt and then grew to love him. But also a very so simple death. I don't know. They were just like, oh, yeah, Wyatt died on day one. He was like, all right, cool. Like,
protecting Lulu.
Yeah, all the deaths were just like, I don't know, they were so simple and unexpected when they came that it was like almost worse than if they had been long and drawn out.
Yeah.
Well, I knew Maisily's death because of Catching Fire, because when Peeta and Katniss watch the Quarterquell, they talk about how Maisily was like pecked to death by birds. And then they talk about Haymitch in the force field. Those are the only things you really know. And I knew it was coming when they separated. I was like, oh, no, don't separate, y'all. Like, you got to stay together. And
it was like waiting for the one you knew was going to be the worst one.
Yeah. And the fact that the Mutts were programmed to find her, to punish her for killing a game maker, was like, whew. Damn. Yeah.
After you watched it happen to Ampert.
Yeah. So I agree with you, Caitlin, on the deaths. That's another one of my, like, small critiques, I think, of this book, is that, like, I think that some of the emotional impact of the book could have hit a little harder. Like, to me, the ending hit me really hard emotionally, but there are a lot of events in between that I feel like they just happen and there wasn't a lot of tension or anything built up around them, and I think they could have hit a little harder.
I don't know. I feel like that's a commentary itself, is, like, yeah, they were sudden and not drawn out, but, like, that's how they lived. You know, these things were going to happen, and they didn't have time to grieve. They just had to move on and go about things and deal with what the Capitol gave them.
Right. But I feel like you can still write an experience for the reader that's different than the experience that's felt by the characters. Like, I understand why Haymitch just, like, he doesn't have time to grieve because he's in the middle of the Hunger Games. But we can still view what happens to her differently and experience it as readers. And I thought a lot of the deaths were a little bit disappointing and also really fast. Like, when I think of Katniss's Hunger Games, I remember there being a lot of injuries that people try to survive. And that is not how this one went. Like, people were either dead or alive, and there wasn't a lot of in between.
I think that's supposed to be because the Quarter Quell is so deadly. Like, that was the whole point of the Quarter Quell.
Yeah, and in Catching Fire, a lot of deaths are fast. Like, Wyrus just runs into the fog and stuff.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You mean Mags?
Mags. Wyrus' death was also anticlimactic,
yes,
though.
So I think in Catching Fire, yes, the Quarter Quell was a lot quicker in deaths because they were very deadly people who were committing these deaths. And then in this Quarter Quell, there's double the number of tributes and the entire arena is poisonous.
Right. I think
genius, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, my gosh. I think the part that, like, I did like in it, though, was that in this book, you can really see the way the game makers were trying to choose the victor, because people were being deliberately picked off at convenient times, that as soon as, like, the game makers felt like, you know, they had an opening in the narrative or they had an emotionally impactful moment to take someone out or a reason to take someone out, that they just did.
Right. It was a show.
And Haymitch gets, like, totally lucky in winning because he was supposed to die. But then other people fucked up before him. Like, they couldn't let Luella live because she killed a game maker. So they prioritized killing her over killing Haymitch.
Not Luella, the...
Maisily.
Oh, Maisily. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Luella kind of had to die, too.
Because she wasn't Luella.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Also,
something we skipped over is the question about the Lenore Dove romance. So the whole time he's in the arena, he's just thinking about Lenore Dove. Mm-hmm. I didn't have enough setup in the beginning for that romance to matter to me, which made, I feel like, his thought processes in the arena less effective to me. And that's why it's like 4 stars, not 5. It's because, like, why would this girl wait for him? Why they're what, 17? So in love, 16. So, like, I don't know. So that's where, like, his relationship with, like, Maisily in the arena was, like, even more, like, it was more detailed and in-depth than his romance that the whole book is written for.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we fell in love with Lenore Dove like we did others' characters in the book. Like, I didn't
she's
feel
no
like
Lucy Gray.
Yeah, she's no Lucy Gray. And that's funny because Dove Gray, whatever. The entire time I was like, is she Lucy Gray's daughter? But no, that's obviously not the case, no.
And it's her, no, it's her cousin's line. Her cousin that she talks about, Lucy's cousin. It alludes to Lenore being...
Maude Ivory.
Her cousin. Yeah, Maude Ivory's descendant.
Yeah, I know, but I was like, oh my God, that'd be so cool.
Well, and then I was like, is Katniss Lucy Gray's descendant?
That's because they say the Everdeens are Covey, but they're like distant Covey.
Yeah, so probably not Lucy Gray either.
And I will say, like, I felt more connection to the Covey just because of the prequel book. So, like, I liked Lenore Dove's family more than I liked Lenore Dove because I was like, oh, my God, what happened to the Covey? Oh, my God, Tam Amber's there. Oh, my God. Like, I was like, oh, these people are still alive. Good. And so I wanted to see more of the Covey. So I felt like a connection because
of that. But the good
that.
Feeling was from the Covey, not from their romance.
No, yeah.
Right.
And, like, okay, this is kind of skipping ahead, but, like, Haymitch is more torn up about Lenore Dove's death than his own family's.
Yeah.
I'm like, why?
I agree with that, too. I thought that was really jarring, actually.
Like, I feel like his reactions to Maisily were the most authentic.
Yeah.
Maisily and, like, Amper were some of the most authentic reactions he had, and they were inside the arena.
I mean, like, Ampert was his Rue.
Mm-hmm. And it was Beatty's son.
I know. I did not expect that. I felt so bad.
That part was crushing.
Yeah. Especially because Beatty is like his mentor and has to like teach him how to survive, but he knows he's going to die because Snow will make sure of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like it's punishment. And you find out that all these people that have won games are already working like Haymitch. So you're realizing that all these people have tried in their games. Mm-hmm. And now they're doing the best they can by mentoring the next generation. And finally, you know, they all end up in Catching Fire to help Katniss achieve this goal, which is sad because none of them could do it before her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when they start writing in all of these characters, I'm like, all right, rip my heart out, you know. A young Mags, a BB already being punished for trying to, like, overthrow the Capitol. I was like, thank God there's no Finnick yet, you know.
Right. Oh, my God. I felt so happy to see Mags and that she was talking and she was like a motherly figure, but also.
And Wyrus wasn't cuckoo.
Yes. And Wyrus, this is why she turned cuckoo, is why we find out that she was tortured post games. I just like, it breaks your heart even more because you see these people and how normal and nice they are.
That's why I'm like, can you imagine reading this? Like some kid growing up now is like, well, let me read them in chronological order.
No.
And then like, do I think they should be read that way? Probably not. But if you did, when you get to Catching Fire, oh my gosh.
It's going
to
break your heart.
And I'll die.
Yeah.
But, like, can you see now why Haymitch was collecting these people to be allies with Katniss and PETA? And it makes it even more heartwarming.
Yes. The other thing that really stood out to me is you really see the start of the whole, like, narrative building. So while this was still like a modern games, to me, this felt like the beginning of like let's get to know their personalities and their sob stories and get people invested in the tributes so that they're like donate more and are more likely to watch. And that stuck out to me because it feels like Haymitch was one of the first people to be really successful at that. And that was a huge part of his mentorship to Katniss and PETA was saying, it's not good enough to just like, you can't just win the games. You have to have a narrative that the Capitol is happy with and that will get you donations and get you money so that you can survive.
Which Katniss is probably the only other time being an asshole worked for your narrative.
Yeah.
Which, like, yeah, you see it start with Snow and Lucy Gray. He's like, you need to sing.
Yeah.
And he's the one who starts this. So he accidentally basically does this.
Yes, no, so Snow started this all. And then it's crazy because Haymitch and Katniss are very similar, but Haymitch is so much smarter than Katniss. Like, even in the games, you notice how observant he is and how he sees things differently. And you just think, I just think about comparing this to Catching Fire and how she was clueless to the fact that everyone was working as an alliance in order to start a revolution and a rebellion. But Haymitch knew immediately as soon as he got in there.
I think kind of the core of that is Katniss without PETA and Gale, her story lacks luster. Haymitch without Lenore Dove would have been the same story.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't need her. It's just about him. And like, you could have just based it on him loving his family and stuff, but you had to work in, you know, the kind of the history of the Covey leading up to stuff. And however, like, Katniss really heavily rides on the two guys and Haymitch is just kind of kind of doing his own thing.
And I think the reason why Katniss succeeds is because she doesn't realize what she's doing.
She's a puppet.
She's a puppet. But then also Snow, because she doesn't realize what she's doing, Snow doesn't realize what she's doing because she doesn't even know what she's doing. She's just there.
Right. Which kind of emphasizes the point that it's more about
luck,
the right time than being the right person. Like, anyone who wants to fight can be the right person as long as the other factors are there.
Yeah. Katniss is a survivor.
Yeah.
Haymitch is a doer, a manipulator. You know, he's like, I can go destroy this arena in my very first games. And in the first games, Katniss is just like, I don't want to die and I don't want to kill PETA.
Yeah.
So let's take these berries.
Yeah. You know, she gets wiser in the second games with the tutoring of Haymitch and all these other past and rebel virus, victors. Yeah. But it's so interesting to see that all tie together. Like, I could talk about it forever and ever.
Right. Okay. So we get to see, we've already kind of talked about this, but there's lots of characters that return. BT, Ampert, the mentors are the same mentors that come back in Katniss's version. We also get to meet some of the iconic, like, capital figures who end up being important. Effie and Plutarch. I love the Effie cameo. I was like, okay.
She like helped Haymitch on accident be very successful. So it's funny then seeing their relationship in the future, how like that's kind of the humor actually is the relationship, the friendship between Effie and Haymitch in the future.
Because Haymitch even recognizes like this person is not malicious. She's actually a good person. She's just incredibly brainwashed.
Dumber than a sack of rocks, but she grows a heart.
She does. And that's what gets her. Because I remember even in the movies, or especially in the movies, their relationship is so funny.
Yeah.
And it's always sort of confounding to Katniss and Peeta that they have this friendship. And they're like, they've literally known each other for decades now. Like, and Haymitch is always like, just shut the fuck up, Effie.
Yeah, and you like really don't know Effie's background at all in the trilogy. So it's fun to see.
Yeah. How did she even get wrapped up in this?
That was like maybe my favorite appearance.
Well, because Magno like licking toads and the reptile suits. I was so disgusted because I hate snakes. And so the mention of snakes and snakes everywhere. Okay. I'm going to have trouble with this
but
movie.
But Lulu with
of
the
that.
Snake was so funny.
I know that was really funny with her with the snake and just hissing at people.
But yeah, it was interesting, you know, and you go from that guy to Katniss has Cinna. Yeah. And it's one of those, again, like wrong time.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Let's talk about Snow.
Yeah, Snow.
He's the one character that is in all of these that we haven't really talked about.
Yeah.
And after reading his origin and then reading his demise, I personally think we might see him at his worst in this book.
Yes, 100%.
He is so terrible, so evil, so purely a villain in this book.
Yeah.
Somehow more so than in, like, Catching Fire.
Well, because it makes you think that was he really truly senile during the OG series? Because he totally could have just killed Katniss's family.
When you think about it, you do the math, he's like 80.
Yeah, no, he could have been senile. He could have been truly senile.
And he's had all this poison. But, like, you see the start of him poisoning people in this one. But, like, the way he just was like, well, you didn't listen, so I'm going to murder everybody you love.
Yeah.
What? Like, he never did that to Katniss because he knew people liked her. Mm-hmm. He learned, I guess. Right. But I was like, okay, this is heinous and unforgivable. And anything that was done in Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes to make you sort of pity him was absolutely erased.
Right. I do think that, like, part of what protected Katniss's family was that her sister was her whole reason for volunteering. So if her sister was killed, people in the capital would have cared about that. Whereas Haymitch's family was, like, totally anonymous. Like, no one would have cared or have known. But I totally agree with you, like, because I think in the first book, it's obviously his rise. So he's not totally, you know, where he is.
You watch him teeter. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in the last books, he has cemented such intense control over the capital and the games that he can kind of afford to be lazy. Like, mm-hmm. I think at that point, he's kind of complacent, which is also what makes it the right time, is that he's not as concerned anymore about inserting his influence over everyone. Like, he's good. And in this book, he's still very much, you know, controlling everything, taking the Hunger Games personally, like being very worried about every single thing the tributes do to fight back. And so I agree with you. I think he's actually the most evil in this book.
The other thing about, like, right time is in the first prequel, you see Snow's relationship form with District 12 because of Lucy Gray and the Covey and his time as a peacekeeper there. And you're like, but why does he hate Katniss so much for no apparent reason? You're like, he has this grudge, and then you see more of it in this when you're like, oh, he's growing to hate District 12 even more because there's another boy with a Covey girl back home, and he somehow defied you. And then you get Katniss, who's like another
Covey-esque girl.
Girl who's defying him, and he's like, every time District 12 gets a freaking victor, it's like the worst day of my life. And so another is like, just it's building to this tension point that isn't there exactly when Haymitch wins.
The connections are crazy because he calls Lucy Gray his songbird, And then he tells Haymitch, just like, I bet you have a little songbird at home. Okay, so the LD, well, the second one has to be a color. And then Haymitch is like, how the fuck does he know how the Covey name their kids? And then he finds out after the games that, oh, he fell in love with the District 12 tribute that won. And something bad happened. And like he was like, Lenore Dove won't talk about it. They won't, the Covey don't talk about Lucy Gray at all. Because I think the Covey know that if they talk about it, they're going to get killed. Because they're very afraid of snow. And it's so crazy, all the connections, because then Katniss Everdeen is not necessarily Covey.
Her parents are in it, though.
But her parents are in it, and you can see how Burdock, you see his singing voice, and I'm so curious to see Katniss's father in the movie. Like, that's one part that I'm like, oh, I really want to see that. And Burdock is Covey adjacent, knows where the Covey are, knows their resting places, and that connection goes all the way back to the first book. And you're like, oh my God, Snow just has, he well, just keeps getting fucked over by District 12.
Two things come out of that is, one, we find out because of Burdock, Lucy Gray did live out her life, did not die, probably lived it out in District 12, probably came back. Like, we don't know what happens to her at the end of Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, but he finds her headstone. The second thing we get is Haymitch was really good friends with Burdock. And so he had even more reason to finally really invest in a tribute. I'm not sure Katniss totally knows that Haymitch and her dad were besties. Yeah. But like, you're like, why does he care so much about this girl? And now you're like, oh, he feels obligated.
Right. It is crazy. I also think there was one comment that really stood out to me, and it was something Beatty said, and he was talking to Haymitch, which Beatty is obviously like, you know, ride or die. Like, we have to find a way to kill the Capitol. And he was talking to Haymitch about District 12, and he was like, you guys always manage to keep more of yourselves than the rest of us.
That was right? Interesting.
Like, 12 has just managed to stay more independent, caring more about each other and their own culture, and don't see themselves in the Capitol at all or aspire to be that way at all. And that also just makes them this hotbed for resistance that Snow can never quite get rid of.
Well, and because Snow has such an aversion to District 12, they're largely just ignored.
They're a blind spot.
That's his own fault.
Yeah.
He wants to avoid District 12 so much because he knows his history there and is fearful of people recognizing him.
So while he doesn't help them, he also doesn't hold them back.
Yeah. Well, and it's crazy because if you think about it, District 12 is in Appalachia. So there's like this like poor Appalachian kind of like cultural identity that's still in this book, even in this dystopian world.
Oh, yeah.
And then the only other district that truly has like some sort of separation from the Capitol is like District 11, and they're the first ones to rise up because they're predominantly Black and they're farmers and they're the agricultures, they're the slave labor, let's be clear about that. And they're the first to get like bitch slapped by the Capitol because of their rebellion, because let's be real, predominantly Black.
Lots of connections to modern history.
Suzanne doesn't write unless she has something to say,
and the quotes that started off this book were crazy.
The George Orwell quotes?
Yes.
They were.
I guess that's like something we can talk about too as we're getting wrapping up some of our discussions, is we get to the end and kind of the theme of the games became, don't let the Capitol make you their propaganda. That was Maisley and Haymitch's thing, which, you know, was definitely a political commentary on current time periods, just like the, you know, district stuff has been for now 15 years. What did you think about how that was their goal, was to not let the propaganda win? And then in the end, it did.
Yeah. That was really crushing that it worked. But I also like the message, because I also think they get better at that. Like, you can see when you fast forward to Katniss's Hunger Games, they know a lot more about how to subvert what the Capitol will show and at what times. And so even though there's a lot of like distortion in Katniss's Hunger Games, I remember Haymitch giving her a lot of advice about like the moments to perform and how you can use those moments for yourself still. So mm-hmm. like with Katniss's dress and her Mockingjay pin, those things became really powerful. And so she was still playing into the Capitol's hands and doing what they wanted to, but also doing something that the message back home was going to be clear.
We also get the origin of the Mockingjay pin.
Yes, I did love getting that.
Damn Amber.
Yeah, it was, you're like so excited because him and Maisley are like, this is my poster. And then like it's cut out completely until it's like super heartbreaking. But you do see how it sets it up for, once again, wrong time. You know, it just gives them more tools for the future.
Well, and then he makes the death promise of like, I will continue to make this fight. And you know that it takes a while, but he finally does fulfill that promise to both Maisley and Lenore Dove.
That was like Lenore Dove's sole purpose right there, was to be like, promise you won't let the sun rise on the reaping. And yeah. He does hold true to that just via Katniss.
Because right? He knows he can't continue every single year to fight, because even if he has no one left to love and no one left for Snow to like hurt, he still knows that he can't just keep fighting the Capitol because he'll run out of energy, he'll run out of juice, and eventually he'll just end up dead.
And also you can't actually get attached to every kid. Like, that sucks. Yeah. That's part of what I think was so painful for Haymitch, was like, you have these kids coming under him and he's like, I can't even care about you because you're going to be dead in a week. Like, especially District 12 being so impoverished and like the Capitol not really caring about them. While it worked for District 12's sort of like resistance symbol, no one wanted to invest in those kids. Like, not every kid could win. Like, they're going up against kids that are trained fighters, and a lot of them are just scared 12-year-olds. Like, you know, not every person could make it out of the Hunger Games.
It puts a lot more emphasis on, even when you win the games, you're still going to be punished.
Mm-hmm. Like,
because, yeah, you won, but now you get to watch every other tribute from now on out die in your district. So, like, you don't want to win.
Yeah.
Well, and then that was, you go.
Oh, I was going to say, that was another thing in this book that I thought was really interesting, is a lot of the kids actually weren't trying to win.
No.
A lot of them were like, I just want a death I can live with. And I don't want to kill certain people. And I thought that was really interesting, because I don't think that was as much true in Katniss's Hunger Games. I think in that one, everyone was like, I'm trying to survive.
I think the careers side of things had evolved a lot more too between this story and Katniss's story. So there were a lot more kids who were out to actually just murder people.
Yeah.
Right.
Psychopaths.
And those districts learned that that was a way to become in favor with the Capitol, was to fully invest in the Hunger Games. So anyway, that was just something I thought was unique, was all these kids being like, I know I'm not going to live, and so I just am trying to like not besmirch my own name and like hurt my family in this process.
And not die a slow, painful death.
Yeah, give me a good death, you know?
Right.
Which is a terrible pact for like 12 to 17 year olds to have to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the ending, I did find extremely heart-wrenching.
Catherine, did you cry?
Yes, I did. It wasn't a sobbing cry. It was like the single tear down cheek.
Yeah, the one tear. I did not cry, but I was very sad.
I also did not cry, but I was, I think, too numb at that point, because I read it all in one sitting, that I was like, I don't have any feelings left to feel for this.
Right. But it was so devastating, just because I think you just really felt the injustice of it all at the end. Like, not only the injustice of the Hunger Games, but the injustice that, like, things didn't work for Haymitch, even though he really tried, and there was really nothing else he could have done. Like, he really did everything he could have, and it just wasn't enough at that time. And that was really devastating.
Snow always lands on top.
But fire catches. Wasn't that what it said or something? Or no, snow lands on top, but the sun still rises. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah, that was, I don't know, heartbreaking. And then you got double punched by the epilogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was about how Katniss and Peeta became his family, and they got him the little gosling so he could be like Lenore Dove with her geese, and he never loved again except for Katniss and Peeta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was so sweet that he mentioned how Burdock walked around so proud with his little girl, and then when Burdock died in the mines, he saw Katniss throughout her growing up, selling her squirrels and saving her family. And then when she gets reaped, he almost had a predisposition for loving this girl and helping her. Even if he tried so hard to fight it, she just got in to his heartstrings, and like, it was just so sweet. And then like him eventually feeling comfortable enough after they get rid of the capital to tell his story and say like, this is what happened. This was Lenore Dove. This was the Cubby. This was Snow's backstory. So then we know that Katniss and Peeta know at least a portion of Snow's backstory, and they know Haymitch's backstory and what happened during that Quarter Quell. And then immediately Katniss, who is not really an emotional person, to say the least, no, gets him
it's
geese.
So sweet. Yeah.
And then Peeta builds him an incubator. And I'm like,
It's also like you go from the ending, he pushes away Katniss's parents and pushes away everyone who loved him. But you see how, like, it all came back for him.
Yeah.
He made his amends.
Okay, so I see at the end, Catherine has left a question about if there's another prequel, which character would you like it
Finnick,
to be?
Finnick.
Yes, Finnick.
Okay.
That's all I could think when I finished this book is, like, when do we get Finnick's book?
I would read Finnick's book. Of course, I want to know more about Finnick. But I actually was thinking I would also really like BT's story.
Yeah.
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 Because I feel like his whole life ends up being so central to the resistance movement himself. Like, Katniss is the figurehead, but like he's the person that actually like
he's the brains
breaks yeah, the what do they call it now? I'm forgetting.
Communications.
Like he breaks the capital. I don't
there
know.
There we go. Yeah, he breaks it all. Like the games. Yeah. And so I would love his backstory. And I would especially love to finally get out of District 12. Like the same thing with Finnick. Mm-hmm. I think it actually would be really interesting at this point to experience some of the other districts.
I would also love to know what Tigress has been up to between its Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes and Mockingjay.
Yeah.
Yes. That one
not as important to me, but I'd like to know.
She becomes a stylist, and I don't know which district she's a stylist for, but it makes me think that maybe it was District 4 or District 3, and then we could see her interacting with the them.
And that she likely became that as an act of rebellion against her stupid cousin.
Yeah. But yeah, no, immediately I was just like, I want Finnick O'Dare so bad.
Finnick. I need the Finnick Annie love story.
But also, like, I want to know what happened to BT's wife and their unborn child, because they're not mentioned in the original series, so that makes me think Snow immediately had them killed.
Yeah.
And he's like the one victor you ever get a picture of having a family afterwards, so that's really sad.
And that's part of why he's so compelling to me too, is like, to be honest, out of everyone, like obviously everyone gave up a lot for the resistance movement. I think he probably gave up more than everyone else. Like,
I would agree.
He gave up his son. Yeah. He gave up his wife and unborn child. Like, he's the person that continually had something to lose and kept being willing to lose it, which is so brutal and heartbreaking.
And he gives up Wyrus.
Yeah.
Who was like a daughter to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a lot older than I thought he was.
Yeah, I didn't realize how old he was either.
But I don't think anyone realized how old he was because his story hadn't been written. So
right. Because if he, like, theoretically, like, I'm assuming right now this is all conjecture, but he's probably someone who won because of his intelligence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He could have won at 12, right? And then he would have had a lot of life after the Hunger Games when he was a victor, but also really young still.
Yeah, I mean, his son could have won had they not just been out to get him because of him being Beatty's son.
Right.
Like, it was just cyclical.
Yeah.
And everything about this whole series is cyclical.
Right.
Okay. One final question. Rank the books. worst to best or best to
worst. I honestly cannot do it because it's been so long since I read them.
Oh, I can do it.
I really don't remember which ones I liked the most.
The worst book is Mockingjay.
Period.
Is that the third one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also the worst movies.
Yes.
It's good, but I don't know. Not my thing. Also, Finnick dies. Nope. The best book is Catching Fire.
Period.
The OG after that. And then, I don't know. I gave Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes 5 stars. And this one, 4. So I guess that would be my last two. And by saying this one is my least, well,
you said Mockingjay was
Mockingjay's last. But that's saying a lot because they're all like 4 and 5 star reads.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would change is I would flip Sunrise and the Reaping and Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Fair.
Yeah. I really hated Songbirds and Snakes.
So I know you did.
That one's last for me for sure.
I'm glad you agree on Mockingjay with me, though. I feel like that's probably an unpopular opinion.
No, I Mockingjay, yeah. It didn't have the like luster that the other two did. And maybe it's because there's no Katniss games.
Was a shell and
yeah.
They use her as a shell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, her and PETA's journey at that point is like really brutal.
Yeah.
Their whole love story is like not really a love story.
No, and then Gale is a fucking bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finnick, Prim, you lose all of them. And then the end is just kind of like, and we went home and raised our children on the bones of our fallen ancestors. People. And I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
By ourselves.
This almost gave us a happier ending to that ending, this book did.
Yeah, because you at least see that they're surviving and kind of thriving if they can give each other geese.
Right. The true sign of thriving.
Hey, raising geese is hard.
Oh, man.
Oh, God.
Okay. Well,
any book recommendations?
Yeah, I was like, now book recommendations.
Read the other ones.
It's a good one.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I feel like dystopian is still so popular. I think I'm going to do... I feel like I need to stop recommending this book because I do it all the time. But, oh my God, now I'm blanking on the title. The fantasy book that I love that the sequel sucks.
Oh, Serpent in the Wings of Night.
Serpent in the Wings of Night. There we go.
You know, as I type this in, the last 2 episodes, that has been your recommendation.
Yeah, I was like, I really need to stop recommending it. But the reason that I... like it is it's so ruthless and it hits on some of the same themes because it's like a battle to the death. They volunteer for it though, but you know, if you love a trial book, which I think this book has some of the same appeal as like a trial book, that's my recommendation.
True. I choose The Will of the Many because it's also a commentary on who holds power. Not quite as extreme, but I feel like we'll probably get that direction with future books. It's just like continuing the commentary on power and politics.
Right.
I'm going to recommend another kind of dystopian book, Divine Rivals. Also YA, kind of follows a love story between two people and they have magical typewriters.
So true. Okay. I'm like trying to think. I'm like, what other?
So you're not recommending the same book for 3 weeks in a row?
Yeah. What I was reading back when I was reading these was like Maze Runner, Divergent.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would not recommend Divergent. Recommend the first book, not the second.
Zero reward for the book you read. Yeah, Divergent. Maze Runner, though. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Maze Runner was pretty good.
We were raised on dystopian literature, which I feel like has been very formative for a lot of us in our little niche age group. So it's very interesting now to see us go feral for another Suzanne Collins book.
I mean, it comes full circle. Everything's cyclical, even books.
Yes.
No, recession pop.
Recession pop. Oh my God, literally.
Recession pop.
Because when did The Hunger Games come out? Was that during the recession?
My guess is, pretty close, like 2008-ish.
It has to have. Yeah. Yeah, that would be about the right time. Okay. Yeah, I got nothing else. So that's it.
Oh my God. September 14th, 2008.
Called it.
Yep. Yep.
Session reading. Woo!
We're all living. It's cyclical, like I said. We're reliving our time period from middle school.
No.
Hey, if more awesome dystopian books come out, I'll be fine with that.
That's fair.
That's true. I had to take a break from them because they got too, like,
repetitive.
Ex-girl does Y thing with ex-boy, and it's just, like, copy-paste, copy-paste, copy-paste. But I would love for the genre to have some new life in it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe adult dystopian, not just
YA. Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
More of, like,
because YA dystopian is actually...
What's the one where they body jump?
Oh, ooh, Immortal Longings.
Immortal Longings, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty good. But anyway, dystopian YA is what made me hate love triangles. So
that's fair. Me too.
That was the origin of my like rage against love triangles.
I don't like love triangles. Yeah, no.
Okay. Anyway, we've been talking a long time now. The podcast is over. Please rate and review our podcast 5 stars. We love to read. We love to hear about the things you love to read. We have quite a few books that listeners have recommended us coming up. So if you've sent us a recommendation, keep an eye out for that. We've got some coming up. And submit your own recommendations so we can read books that you'd like us to review.
They know.
I'm Casey.
Haymitch is being that quarter quell.
I'm Catherine.
Katniss, who is not rude, to say the least.
No. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break.
And then PETA builds him an ink.
Well, it's also like you go from the ending, he pushes away Katniss.